going to be doing more to make sure that that happens.
Anything specific on the agenda coming up that we can hope for?
There's nothing on the agenda yet.
But there will be things on the agenda. I mean, we're looking at the process and trying to improve it.
I mean, you know, you understand my cynicism when I've thought, sure. For example, month after month, you to put something on the agenda concerning shelter, and I get nothing from you, although you're quite forthcoming in conversations. We can't get anything from you as far as increasing homeless shelter goes, and we're entering a winter where right now 95% of the homeless population is outside and criminalized at night. Soon it'll be, hopefully with the armory, 80% in November, but that is completely inadequate. And we're in the middle of a shelter emergency, and you tell me, well, everything's going to be okay, we're going to look into it. You understand that I'm a bit concerned that these are statements without substance?
Right. Well, you have a right to be concerned until you see something come on the agenda that makes a difference.
Is anything planned?
I have plans.
The shelter, good. Can you confide in us?
No, I don't want to confide necessarily. I mean, I wasn't talking about shelter, incidentally. I was talking about... Please, you tend to change topics for me once in a while. But I think the shelter situation is difficult and horrible, and we need to work on it. I have quite a few projects, and that's certainly at the top of the list, but there are a lot of things going on. It'll get better.
You've heard about the beatings of people that have happened in the last week, then?
I certainly have, and I've called the police on the matter.
Any chance of getting a safe zone out of you for homeless people during the pendency of these attacks?
I don't think that's necessarily the first way that I want to respond to these attacks. The first way I want to respond is by investigating them properly and making sure we understand what went into it and seeing that the district attorney and others prosecute them appropriately.
If you go to the New Leaf Market, by the way, and you may occasionally visit there downtown.
I was there yesterday.
You should speak to Chico, the squeegee man. He was hit by a rock 24 hours before the assaults on the Kinmetzer youth and
right.
The two other individuals outside Lighthouse Liquors or whatever, not Lighthouse Liquors, the Benicio's Liquors. And his female companion was also hit with a rock.
I will definitely approach him.
What I'm telling you is that these people need safe places to sleep at night, and you have been the key vote in stopping this. And I say this because while you are only three when you're with Fitzmore, when you're with Crone and Sugar, if the three of you stood together, I think Catherine Byers would be forced to say, let's do something. And so far, you have followed her on all these matters. I am urging you publicly to take some action so that homeless people in the next 2 months have a safe place to go to sleep at night.
Mm-hmm.
Take some action.
Right.
And I say that because you have taken no action in the last 9 months. And you are a key person here, Tim. You know that.
I'm trying to work to create the kind of consensus that I'll make for a real functional change.
In the meantime, while you're working on the consensus, find a place for people to go,
okay,
you know?
Can I add something to this discussion that's off topic just slightly?
But of course.
That's that there is a potluck over at the homeless garden. Have you mentioned that on your
Please.
Program today?
No, I have not. Tell me about it.
There's a dinner at the homeless garden at the depot site this afternoon. It should have started already. It'll go until 4 o'clock according to my calendar and 5 o'clock according to someone who just spoke to me. I plan on being there later this afternoon. I hope people that are interested will come out to
and
the depot site.
Again, give us the address of that for those who don't
know. I don't know the absolute address, but you know, the depot site is at the corner of Washington.
125 Washington, my producer tells me.
125 Washington Street. And I'm not absolutely sure exactly where it's going to be sited, but I assume right there at the garden. So anybody who's interested should come out there, and certainly they could chat with me, too.
Well, I want to thank you for coming on the air, and I will say this about you, though I really, you know, take you to task for your votes. You're not afraid to publicly address these issues, or perhaps not to address them, but to be addressed on them. I don't know.
Right.
So please, do something if you can. If you can introduce a resolution, I know the Homeless Issues Task Force will probably be bringing you a resolution shortly, asking that a parking lot be open, that there be a part of the park be open for a dawn to, you know, dusk to dawn kind of gone by dawn situation. You to sit around saying you're going to think about it and to talk in a very moderate voice about forming a consensus while people are getting hit with rocks, I think is disingenuous. Or indifferent to the situation. I think you understand.
I used the word disingenuous first, Robert, so you're not allowed to.
I'm learning from you. I'm learning from you.
Okay, all right. I'll see you later. I have to run.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that was
Councilmember Tim Fitzmaurice giving his the usual runaround on the issue of, well, certainly on the shelter issue. He has some plans about the police, but we don't get to know about them. Give him a call if you'd like to register your thoughts. His city council number is 420-5020, and then I guess you got to push a number to get you then get to push his particular voicemail. But if you wait long enough on the line, you'll get the appropriate number. And in fact, I think my producer is trying to find it now. Again, what do you think of Tim Fitzmaurice's view? Do you support him? Is he right on, or is he ducking the issues, as I think he does and has been for the last year? 420-5020. Should he be voting with Byers, Hernandez, Rotkin, and Matthews on shutting down oral communications? Or should he be voting with the people he was elected with, Sugar and Crone, to expand oral communications, to take some action on that? Should he be voting to rubber stamp Cynthia Matthews' appointee to the Citizens Police Review Board, Daniel Alper, who, by the way, doesn't necessarily seem such a bad person, but has had no public investigation or process? The number to call is 420-5020, and then I believe you push 4, extension 4. 420-5020, and you'll get on that's the City Council 24-hour message line, and that's how you get a hold of Tim Fitzmaurice, one way or another. Again, I do acknowledge that Fitzmaurice, unlike almost any other council person, is not afraid to go on the air, and that is commendable. The problem is he never says much that you can really, you know, hold in your hand. It's all kind of smoke and nice guy-ness, and it's kind of sad. You know, I don't, again, it's a disappointment of the hopes of those who voted for him. There is another approach to city council that I think we should consider, and I'm going to play a song about that. It concerns sort of serving city council its just desserts, as presenting them with well, it's as American as apple pie. Let me present you this song, and let me know what you think. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3, and our call-in number is 427-3772.
See the man in his limousine, in his tie and well-dressed shirt, hoping that he's not been seen on the lookout for dessert. He knows that he is guilty, and the visit might be paid by the vegan vigilantes of the biotic baking brigade. What's that sailing through the air in the boardroom? See them shiver. You can spend your life hoping for pie in the sky, but the baking brigade delivers. If you sell your city's soul to the landlord's greedy pack, you, my friend, have earned yourself a tasty pastry snack. You can call yourself a liberal and hope your crimes will fade, but your sellout soul will be exposed by the biotic baking brigade. What's that sailing through the air in the boardroom? See them shiver. You can spend your life hoping for pie in the sky, but the baking brigade delivers. So if you cut down the last of the forests, spew poison in the air, don't you be surprised to find that cheesecake in your hair. Yes, if you are a corporate criminal, you've surely made the grade to receive a fresh baked goodie from the biotic baking brigade. What's that sailing through the air in the boardroom? See them shiver. You can spend your life hoping for pie in the sky, but the baking brigade delivers. Thank you. beware all you scoundrels of industry. We know of your disgrace. So smile for the camera with the cream pie in your face. You can hope that we won't find you out as you're hiding in the shade. But someday soon you'll meet your doom, the Biotic Baking Brigade. What's that sailing through the air in the boardroom? See them shiver. You can spend your life hoping for pie in the sky, but the Baking Brigade delivers. What's that sailing through the air in the boardroom? See them shiver. You can spend your life hoping for pie in the sky, but the Baking Brigade delivers.
And that was a song about the Biotic Baking Brigade, which is the group that delivered a pie to Willie Brown as a special token of their esteem for his Harass the Homeless policies in Golden Gate Park and elsewhere, where his new kind of matrix without the matrix, the program without the name, the attack on homeless people as a sort of get them out of the area gentrification approach, was an actual intensification of the program, which began under police chief and mayor Frank Jordan. And now, of course, we get the worst of all worlds in this upcoming mayoral election. You've got Clint Riley, who apparently takes his stand from Obergruppenführer Giuliani in New York City. He's running for, he believes in the broken windows theory, more of like a broken mind theory, as far as I'm concerned. And you've got Jordan, and you've got Brown engaging in this horrible three-way contest for mayor in San Francisco. Well, you know, you just heard Tim Fitzmaurice call in to the show. You're welcome to call in and get into that if you're interested. I found very little substance in what Fitzmaurice had to say. Tim always strikes me as having lots of goodwill, but not too many good ideas, and lots of bad behavior in terms of following around behind the mayor's little wagon. Whatever she decides to do, he seems to jump right in right behind her. The votes, unfortunately, are not 4-3, which would really clarify things, but 5-2, which make voters feel that the three people they elected aren't hanging together, and one of them is kind of, if not sold out, I don't know what, gone out to lunch? And it's not clear to me what really is going on. But there are some people who have an interesting view that I kind of rely upon for perspective, and one of them is Scott Graham. And Scott is a perennial observer of city council. He's been on the show before. I've got an interview I'm about to play with him. And before I do, I want to make an announcement or two. Tomorrow at 4:30, there's going to be a meeting of a subcommittee. Now, you may remember my view of the Homeless Issues Task Force is summed up in my rather painfully repeated criticism in the name, Task Farce, not Task Force. But supposedly, the Homeless Issues Task Force has broken up into subcommittees and are now going to do things in the subcommittees. So the place to really get things done, register your concerns, and then kick a little ass to bring back to the main Homeless Issues Task Force to be ratified and then hopefully acted upon, is the subcommittee. So 4:30 tomorrow, subcommittee on treatment, that we're talking about social services and such. It's kind of strange they would call it treatment, but that's what they do. And that is at Community House, 4:30. If you're interested in that issue, go down there. Community House is at the corner of Highway 1 and Highway 9. It's the trailer project. You can see it from Highway 1 as you drive past. Then at 5:30, the one that I'm going to be at, the one that interests me, is the legal subcommittee. I'm going to be proposing a number of things to this legal subcommittee that I had thought and hoped they would bring up and pass on their last big agenda, but no, they're not. So they're going to the subcommittee. We're going to try to make sure the city attorney makes sure courts do not lie about the law, that the fines have in fact been dropped from $162 to $54, that in fact the courts have ruled that there is a necessity defense that you can raise if there is a camping ticket given you. That's the ICORN defense. that in fact we were asking, hoping to get the city attorney to check out all the last whatever camping tickets have been issued since April to inform every single one of them that if they paid $162, they overpaid, and try to take some action there in redress, whether that means, you know, suing the courts or sending them some sort of legislative redress through, I'm sure, Councilmember Fitzmaurice might be eager to do that. Doesn't want to see those homeless people abused because the city attorney was asleep at the wheel and didn't tell the courts until August that the fines have dropped from $162 to $54, or the courts didn't incorporate it until August, which it should have done before that, because when a law is passed a month after that happens, it goes into effect. The law was passed in March, went into effect in April. That's the reality of it. Apparently homeless people don't rate the same respect. They don't, if the law concerns them, then our city attorney is a little more, less inclined to take action quickly. We'd hope to have an update from you on Diane Christensen, the Citizens Police Review Board person, sorry, the independent investigator appointed by the Citizens Police Review Board, appointed by the city manager on the recommendation of our review board, getting paid a hefty sum to investigate, but told that the investigation will be classified from birth. We're proposing that she hold immediate, have an immediate public testimony gathering process. In order to support this, I recommend you contact the Citizens Police Review Board and urge them to do this. The Citizens Police Review Board number, I bet I have it in my little red book here. I'm going to look for it. It is 420. That can't be right. My goodness, let me double check that. 420. No, that's their old number. This book must be older than I thought. It's 420, I believe it's 6295. But again, if you don't, the best thing to do for that is for me to scour around until I find a piece of paper with the number on it and give you the right number, because it's always good to call the right number rather than the wrong number. It makes for better communications and tends to save wear and tear on the dialing finger. I guess you don't dial anymore. You punch if you're if you've gotten any kind of a phone that is up to date. But as usual, I seem to be having problems finding even one document with the number of the Citizens Police Review Board on it. Let me look a little further. See what I can find. Homeless Issues Task Force, City Council. Ain't this always the way? Letter from Neil Coonerty, of all people. And lots of legal papers. Boy, well, in the opening part of your phone book, there's a section on government agencies. And that section will give you the number of the Citizens Police Review Board. Call them up and tell them that you want the investigation to be as public as possible, and you want the process gathering by Diane Christensen to be as public as possible. And that's the way to do it. Even if you can't get your trusty Bathrop Spears broadside host, Robert Norris, here to find the right number for you. Well, I don't see the phones ringing off the hook, but if you want to call in, you can, 427-3772. There will be a meeting of the Citizens Police Review Board the second Monday coming up, and I believe there actually is a meeting of the Citizens Police Review Board members, if you want to talk to them privately, or that's not so much privately as be there to put things on the agenda. That is a definite possibility. Let me look at my little notebook here to give you some of the details. Interesting. You know, I suspect September 30th is going to be a time when you can do that on Thursday. But in order to get more information, I encourage you to keep in touch with the HUF line. That's the organizational line of Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, Civil Rights for the Homeless Group, also my line. I'm Robert Norse. And you can leave me a message there, and If you've got any questions about times and dates of meetings, you'll be able to have them answered. Plus, I'm hoping to put I usually do kind of an update on upcoming meetings on that line. So, now let's do a little, as I promised, a little listening to Scott Graham, also known as Neptune, sort of a people's observer of the city council, a man who sometimes has alliances, even I question, but certainly worth listening to.
Well, it's 10:30 and we're in the parking lot across from the what would be the farmer's market if the farmer's market were marketing, but it being 10:30 at night and being September 15th, it's not. We're here with Scott Graham. Hi, Scott.
Hey, Robert. What's happening?
Well, that's really what I wanted to ask you. You were at City Council last night. You, I guess a council meeting that, I don't know, I guess it was, we'll call it the Borders Council meeting, because even though no mention was made in the paper the next day, there was certainly quite a large Coonerty-motivated crowd to protest Borders, right?
Yeah, it seemed like Neil had orchestrated a large gathering of people to come to Oral Communications and basically take over Oral Communications for his own agenda, which is to stop Borders, even though he himself, while he was on the council, approved many chain stores coming into town as long as they weren't affecting his business personally.
Now, for example?
Well, we had Starbucks, Costco, the box stores at the end of River Street were approved while he was on the council.
The Gateway Project?
Yeah, the wonderful Gateway Project.
And then, of course, I talked to an attorney in today in court, and he was telling me that he was a little bit, he noted there'd never been any discounts at Bookshop Santa Cruz until Crown Books came into town. And he also noted that George Au's West Side Longs was supported by Coonerty, Neil Coonerty,
right,
which was sort of a chain store kind of operation.
Oh, yeah. Well, Longs is a chain store. Coonerty, over objections of well-organized neighborhood groups all over the West Side, Coonerty passed the him and Scott Kennedy, and I don't know if Rockin was on there or that. I don't think so. That was part of his time off, but they, I think Matthews was there, though. Probably Byers. I don't know how she voted. But, you know, they allowed Longs to happen on the West Side, along with Kentucky Fried Chicken. Kentucky Fried Chicken happened at the same time, and they kind of snuck that in. No one was even paying attention to that one.
Well, Kentucky Fried, I know, has been on the East Side for some time.
Yeah, but I mean, the West Side store, especially at the location where it's at, I mean, it's such a traffic nightmare right in that little stretch of Mission Street to have a high volume business right there, you know, high turnover rate of customers. It's sort of a ridiculous traffic nightmare.
Mm-hmm. Well, there was a number, of course, of Neil Coonerty's employees were in the audience. What I noticed was there weren't very many, I didn't see virtually no SCAN members. I didn't see any pedal power people. The homeless advocates that were there happened to be there for the Argue case and really didn't really support Borders. I was the only one who had a, you know, Borders out kind of little card on my chest. Like they were passing out these cards. And when I spoke, of course, I criticized Coonerty for his support of anti-homeless laws, the downtown ordinances that were passed 5 years ago. Sit on the sidewalk, go to jail. You know, ask for a dime after dark, go to jail. And, you know, and I didn't mention the fact that, of course, I've been barred from the Bookshop Santa Cruz since 1994.
A fact you're quite proud of, Robert.
Well, I don't like to brag. In any case, there was, so we can call it the Borders Evening. But the evening was broken up by some other events. Any comments on that?
Well, it seems that Jim Costner and Steve Argue decided that even though they had full knowledge of the protocol at the city council meetings, where if you had spoke at the last last Oral Communications, you have to wait for people that hadn't spoke at the last one before you get a chance to speak, and they decided to cut in line and speak anyway, and I thought Steve did a good job, even though, you know, the Catherine cut off his mic. Steve turned around and talked to the audience, and
he had a big picture with him. He was talking, of course, about the May 22nd incident and the trial that is currently going on. His trial for his freedom.
And Steve did a pretty good job. You know, I mean, he, I think, won somewhat support of the audience. Nobody seemed pissed off at him or anything. And then, you know, his 3 minutes were up and he left. And then a few people later, Jim Koster went up and the same sort of thing ensued where the mayor said, well, you spoke at the last time. You know, you have to go to the, you have to wait till people that didn't speak last time speak, and he refused to go along with that. She shut off his mic.
Not only did she shut off his mic, but she instructed the television crew to blacken the screen.
Well,
Stephen argued.
They did that with argue too. No, they didn't
kind of
blacken the screen. They pointed the camera down to the middle of the floor there.
Well, isn't that kind of outrageous? I mean, what is this? The city council suddenly controls the Channel 72 television services? What is this?
Well, I guess they just, because they were,
I don't think we can get around this.
There
should be an independent service, and if there's a newsworthy event happening at City Council, even if the mayor doesn't like it, it seems to me the mayor can arrest people if she wants. She can order them evicted from the room, but for her to start playing these games of censoring them out, I don't know. I mean, it made sense to me when I saw it happen. My mic was turned off, I guess, a month or two ago by Keith Sugar, who got a kind of a giggle about it, and he got a little write-up in the Sentinel as being the man who could censor Robert Norris.
And told Robert that his punishment would be bad karma.
Right, which actually was quite clever, and I kind of appreciated that. rather than Rotkin's endless, I'm going to arrest you for this and arrest you for that, and, you know, that sort of thing, which Rotkin no doubt would like to do and has done with some people in the past. Anyway, so you said that then Costner went up to the mic, and you feel that he lost the audience that Steve Argue had in fact held?
Yeah, I think, once Jim went up there, because I don't know what it was, but I think just because most of the people there were there on this Borders thing and were Neil Coonerty fans, which aren't necessarily that left-leaning of a mindset. So a lot of people started getting upset and sort of booing him and hissing him and trying to shut him up. And then he said, well, how many people want to listen to what I have to say? And only, maybe a dozen people raised their hands, and the rest of the audience was telling him to shut up and sit down.
It was a packed house.
Right, it was a packed house. And instead of, he offered, well, how many of you want to listen to me? And he didn't get a majority, clearly. And so making that offer, he should have been able to, he should have followed through with his offer, which was
gone outside and conferred with those 12 people.
Right, or something, or went to the back of the line. I mean, as it was, everybody that wanted to speak the other night spoke. And so right. Jim could have spoke at the end of the line.
Now, you see, there's a good point, though. Now, I don't know. Nobody knew that at the time. Byers is notorious for cutting off oral communications before other people, before the entire crowd can speak. In fact, I think it was because of Argue and Costner demanding their time that she extended oral communications so as not to appear repressive to other people.
Well, that could very well be true. I mean, there was, during the whole beach area thing, when Celia and Catherine were the minority on the council, they would argue vehemently to listen to the people, to let the people speak. And now, with Catherine having the shoe on the other foot, it seems that she's more rigid. It's like, if we have this time period set up, that's all we're going for. It's like, we're not going to extend it. Although I think, because of that crowd, she was going to extend it anyway, but not necessarily to Jim in any, yourself included, that you people would have gotten to speak. She would have let everybody that Neil brought there speak that wanted to.
How democratic. Selectively democratic.
Right.
I was initially really aghast, even when Steve began to do what he was doing. I felt just sort of sick to my stomach, and I was afraid that he was losing, popular support, and that I personally would become part of the share in the odium and the anger that he had prompted and that Jim also prompted. But after it happened, as I was telling you, I kind of reassessed it, and I thought, I talked to various people, and they were, while not, you know, markedly fervent in either the cause of Jim and Steve, they felt that they should have had a chance to speak. And they wondered why Catherine had to be so rigid about her, you know, her business and cut off the mic and shut off the television just for these people who had 3 minutes. I mean, and as I was saying to you, it wasn't as though people in line were protesting and saying, hey, you're cutting in front of us. And they weren't cutting in front. They stood in line with everybody else waiting until their turn came up. And they were also, they were persuaded, and not unreasonably so, though technically they were wrong, and I verified this later in the library, they believed they had not spoken at the last meeting.
And the last regular meeting.
Right. Now, you see, that's the problem. The council has had two meetings since the last regular meeting. It had a meeting on September 7th. It had a meeting on August 7th. And the last regular meeting at which oral communications officially happened was, I don't know, July 27th. So, you know, you can say, oh, yeah, technically speaking, they were out of order. But when I talked to them, they truly believed, and I think you're wrong, that they knew that they'd spoken. I don't think they knew that. I think they believed, they sincerely believed, and Steve called Byers a liar because he believed she was not telling the truth. They believed they were right. And I think Byers could have diffused it by just letting it pass. And I know that she would have been attacked by some pundits like Lee Kornstrom and Mike Rotkin, you know, for being weak or something. But I think it would have been a much more reasonable thing to do, and actually would have diffused the situation considerably. And I thought afterward, this...
Or she may have taken a moment to explain the difference between a regular meeting and a special city council meeting to those guys,
right,
so that they could have reassessed their judgment on whether they had actually spoken at the last...
But why even get into this elaborate bureaucratic tangle? Why not just say, look, take your 3 minutes. Does anyone mind if I take their 3 minutes? She might have even said that. And then someone might have objected, you know, who's in line, in which case I'm sure Jim would have said, okay, come on up, take it, go in front of me. Jim frequently does that, Jim Costner.
I mean, myself, I think, you know, a better approach to doing this kind of thing would be that if Steve or Jim want to speak at a city council meeting where they had spoke the week before or the meeting before or the regular meeting before, find somebody that didn't, let that person go up to the podium and say, I'm going to give my 3 minutes to Jim Costner, or I'm going to give my 3 minutes to Steve Argue.
That's a good strategy, I think.
And you could sidestep the entire issue.
What else happened at that meeting of any significance?
Well, your older brother didn't get to build his giant house out there on Westcliff Drive.
Be less cryptic for our naive audience.
Oh, Philippe Kahn, the former owner of Borland, who's starting another company here in downtown Santa Cruz.
He was prevented from?
From building his giant house on Westcliff.
And your view of that?
Well, I think, you know, considering the lot, where it is, and the size of the lot, I think the house was just way out of proportion. You know, he needs a lot about four times larger than he has to build the house that he wants to build. It's more of an estate without the grounds, you know.
What's the problem with that? Well, I mean, it's his property. Why shouldn't he be able to build a big house?
Well, I mean, part of the one of the reasonings that the council used was that there's a coastal... Part of the Coastal Act is that nothing should be constructed on the coast that is something of prominence, which, you know, is, we wonder about the boardwalk in that instance. But, you know, and they showed pictures of what the house, you know, they had like these computer pictures of what the house would look like, mm-hmm, you know, in place of the house that's currently there. And it definitely would stick out. I mean, you would, if you were in a boat on the bay, that house would stick out compared to the houses around it.
So you're not allowed to build houses that stick out?
Right, according to the Coastal Commission.
I see.
You have to, like, conform to what's already there, the existing topography, so to speak.
Anything happened during the afternoon? I know that you kind of educated me on a number of the items that came up on the consent agenda, and I will say that Mayor Byers, under those circumstances, only stopped me from speaking once. And I guess she had five or six options to stop me on five or six items. And usually you have to really put your request in significantly in advance, I'd found. In previous city council meetings under previous mayors, if they're talking about a consent agenda item and you haven't asked to talk about it, they don't let you talk about it. But Byers seemed to be using a looser strategy that let people talk about those items that had been pulled. And even she, I think she even went back and redid polling of the consent agenda item to allow, I don't know whether it was a member of the public or the council, to pull off.
There were two items that they had to go back, reopen the consent, because they had already pulled the items from the consent agenda and then voted on the ones that they hadn't pulled. So they went back and undid their original vote.
You know what this process means, all you confused people out there, is the consent agenda of the city council is like 10 or 15 items or sometimes more.
Well, it's like 27.
It's a bunch of them that they don't want to vote on individually, so they just say, we all consent to vote on these in one big vote, yes or no. And actually it's yes, because that's why it's called the consent agenda. But if members of the public or of the council want to have a particular item which they want to talk about and possibly not vote yes on, or they have concerns about, they pull it from the consent agenda. And public can do that too. And I've often pulled items concerning police expenditures, concerning so-called homeless services expenditures. I've talked about parking lots where they're building these huge parking lots which have specific anti-homeless architecture, where they're talking about not allowing loitering in certain areas. People will not be able to sleep here and there. They're designing them almost, it seems, deliberately to make sure that people don't, the tramps and the hobos and all the poor people don't have an opportunity to hide in the interstices.
Well, I think they're actually deliberately designing the new parking structures so that they can quickly be turned into prisons at a moment's notice, that if they need to round up masses of people, they can just go in and bolt in the iron bars into the spaces, the open spaces.
Is this September paranoia, Scott? Or are you just making one of your usual midnight witticisms?
Well, I mean, people have to wonder about these kind of things. I mean, we're, you know, building our police force. Mightier and mightier police force all the time.
You did point out that in the afternoon agenda yesterday, there were two more police positions added, pushing the force up to 99, I guess, of sworn officers or something?
Well, I think it's sworn and community service officers.
I actually thought there are more employees. I think there are 120-some employees.
Well, there's all the, you know, secretaries and all the other pencil pushers that are in the office.
Well, and we had these strange comments from Crone and Sugar. Actually, Crone and Sugar, you know, we're trying to say, let's not have an armed cop on the campus marching around. That's not the best way to deal with it. But they didn't just say, you know, let's have some other approach. They talked about having a CSO who is also armed, but he's not armed with a gun. You know,
Well, at first, actually, Keith was talking about having a plainclothes officer without a gun on campus instead of a uniformed officer, whether it's a community service officer or a sworn cop, that he didn't think that, you know, a uniformed officer was necessarily the best approach, that possibly just somebody in casual clothes that was known to be the cop on campus.
What he wanted was a cop that wasn't assigned to campus as a control officer, that someone who could acquaint students with how the police department works, you know, answer questions about public safety, but was not there specifically to make sure the police did not that the students did not violate laws. I mean, that I thought was the point. I was not that he wore a uniform or didn't wear a uniform, but that he wasn't there as an active law enforcement official.
Right. That was part of Keith's argument, was that he didn't think that the police should be there trying to criminalize the youth of the high school.
So at least he spoke out on that issue, and he and Crone, I think, were voted down 2-5, is that right?
Yeah, it seems like an old story from last year.
Well, it's a good story. I mean, I think it's an important one. There are going to be many issues in which it will take some educating to happen, and unless those 2-5 votes happen, you won't have the majority votes later. I mean, that's
right.
The way I look at it.
Yeah, I mean, I look at it as a positive thing myself, too, except for the fact that it seems like we lost Tim. I don't know, somewhere.
Seems nothing, man. He's
somewhere
gone.
Along the line.
Yeah, Morris was talking about our friend the police, and I'm not sure what his he was just, he was a shadow of his former self. Maybe there was no former self.
Well, Tim did also argue for a CSO.
And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, listening to an interview with Scott Graham about the Santa Cruz City Council meeting 2 weeks ago.
April 6, 1999, about 5:10, we're calling Edward DeBolt.
I thought we had some more on that, but apparently not.
April 8th, 1999. It's about 10:40 in the morning. We're in the Coffee Roasting Company. We're talking to Edward DeBolt. And Edward, you've patiently waited for 45 minutes here because a matter.
Yeah, interestingly enough, we just ran into another interview. Edward DeBolt is a sort of a man who we've talked to before. He got into some trouble with the homeless services up on Elm Street at the Elm Street Mission and had a number of concerns about both service provider misconduct and police misconduct, which he presented rather articulately before leaving town. Now he is back in town, and let's listen to that interview. I guess we ran out of time on the other interview with Scott Graham. That is to say, we ran out of tape. But until our next talk show host arrives, which should be momentarily, here's a little bit from Edward DeBolt, a youthful individual who is not afraid to speak his mind.
And actually would have diffused the situation considerably. And I thought afterward, this...
Or she may have taken a moment to explain the difference between a regular... to those guys,
right,
so that they could have reassessed their judgment on whether they had actually spoken at the
right,
last...
But why even get into this elaborate bureaucratic tangle? Why not just say, look, take your 3 minutes. Does anyone mind if I take their 3 minutes? She might have even said that. And then someone might have objected, you know, who's in line.
This is the Bermuda Triangle of the tapes here on this machine. Interesting. Well, it's time for a musical break here, folks. Hang in there.
Israelis have a nudist camp on Taba, right by Egypt on the Gulf of Aqaba. Bathers sunning on the beach were dangerously within reach of Muslim guards patrolling near the spa. And now it says to cover up in the Koran, but those Hebrews hung it out to get a tan. So for fear of getting heated, the Egyptians just retreated, which provoked this novel thought for a peace plan. Take off your clothes to those you oppose. Be well exposed to your foes and strike a pose. No need to hurl a rock across the fence if your enemy is being real attentive. Strip to the buff, stick out your duff and strut your stuff. The sight of muff will be enough to halt the tough. Forget about an armored probe, you'll get more room if you disrobe. Relations will improve around the globe. Now the colonel of the Egyptian police platoon made this comment as he peered beyond the dune. All these sabras on the Sinai really look a sight to mine eye, though I think we'd better take some action soon. As he turned, he saw the men of his fine crew, field glasses trained on each attractive Jew. So he went and gave the order to redefine the border 100 yards down farther from the view. Take off your clothes to those you oppose. Be well exposed to your foes and strike a pose. You can unveil a devastating offensive. It's healthier than war and less expensive. Strip to the buff, stick out your duff and strut your stuff. The sight of muff will be enough to halt the tough. Forget about an armored probe, you'll get more room if you disrobe. Relations will improve around the globe. Now here's the surest way to end a running feud. Simply approach your adversary in the nude. If he or she's a prude, they'll think it's lewd and move away. Who knows, they might be in the mood. You win either way. So if you're fighting and you just can't take it, you just might try your luck at standing naked. Before they have another riot, Northern Ireland should try it. The whole world could ease its tensions if we'd only undertake it. I propose this brand new cure for hot disputes. Have the warring parties meet in birthday suits. Imagine how a summit conference might progress. formalities abandoned as each delegate undressed. No harm in getting back to bare essentials. World leaders must admit it has potential. For uncovered, one can make appeals to what the other side reveals and see they're not so different after all.
Jim did say that he thought having an armed police officer on campus was sort of possibly overkill. You know.
But he voted for it.
He did vote for it, yeah.
And again, part of this kind of treacherous, slippery slope here is that they can get, they think, money for it. I guess the next item on the agenda was they're going to get money. They were going to get money on the school item for, I guess, what, from some state or federal agency, some education?
Yeah, well, there's, I guess, some federal money that's combined with state money, which is then also combined with school district money.
Right.
To
books, no, let's have more cops on campus. Thank you very much. The next item was this idea of more cops for the Mission Street widening. And this one, however, would come out of the coffers of the city, right? At least you pointed that out to me.
Well, at this time, what they're going to do is they're going to pay for the cop. The city's going to pay for the cop now in hopes that Caltrans will reimburse them for it. Even though Caltrans has already said, well, we'll send a highway patrol through there more often than usual.
Did you think this was this something you as a council member, Graham, would have voted for?
I don't think, because, I mean, during the budget hearings, they